Hey everyone, welcome to Office Hours with Cloud Posse, where we discuss the latest DevOps announcements and Terraform insights, all sourced from our Sweet Ops community. Plus, it's well, I do this every week. How can I forget? Anyway, it's October 8th, 2025. I'm your host, Eric Ostman. Real quick, I'm the founder and CEO of Cloud Posse. Cloud Posse sells AWS reference architectures that get you production ready in just 2 weeks. So if you're interested to learn more, go to cloudposse.com. Now, how can you maximize today's session? Well, first off, our format's very informal. You can engage as much as you'd like, ask questions. And if you're curious about any of our open source tools like Atmos, this is a great place to ask. And for those on the recording, we host these calls live. So you can join us by registering at cloudposse.com/officehours. Again, cloudposse.com/officehours, where we have a little intake form. You enter in your email and we'll send you an invite. So we will post a recording of today's session to our YouTube channel. That's at youtube.com/cloudposse. If you find any portion of today's session valuable, go ahead and share it with your team. You'll find it posted there in just a couple of hours. So here's what caught our attention this week. First, flight control was trending on Hacker News this past week. There are quite a lot of these platform as a service offerings. What stood out about this one, I'll point out. So just to be clear, this is not an open source product. You can't self-host it. It is entirely commercial. It is, gunning to be yet another one of the 25 Heroku alternatives. The difference here is you kind of plug in your own AWS organization or account rather, and then it will manage your apps within that account. It does more than just like containerized deployments. I believe it supports a certain subset of AWS services as well. And they talk about like supporting Next.js apps, which is a little tricky. So they've done a lot other glue behind the scenes to make it work. Yep. Anyone kick the tires on this? Have more to share about flight control?
Yeah, actually, my CTO is a good friend of the CEO of Flight Control. So I
Oh, no way.
lucky to try it actually in our startup. So, like I try to reverse engineer what they are doing is like CloudFormation template, but they manage the control plane on their flight control actually. So if you like want infrastructure as code, but you don't want the headache of managing it, Flight Control can make it easy for you to like virtual machine containers, as you mentioned, CDN stuff, static content. Yeah, it's a subset actually, not the full scale of AWS yet.
Yeah.
But yeah, for small, I think small medium business, this is a good alternative to, have a DevOps team or something.
So I'm curious, what was the onboarding experience like? How did it work? Do you remember? Were you involved in that?
Yeah. So we did a test like a POC. You just connect your AWS account and that's it. You specify a container like Docker file for your application and that's it, or the source code on Git.
Yeah.
And it's doing its gluing actually, a much of a gluing work between behind the scene.
Does
Yeah.
it support a partial like configuration as code type setup where you can have like Vercel, you can have a Vercel.json file in your repo?
Yeah, they have flight control.toml or something, the YAML
Okay.
file. Yeah, and you can specify, I don't know, CPU, RAM, replica counts, like how many instances you want, something like that. So, yeah.
Cool. Well, yeah, it sounds interesting. Especially, the more and more teams are developing a lot of just internal apps that are, developed with agentic programming methods and stuff like that. Having a way to easily deploy them is nice. So this checks the bill. All right, let's see, where did I go? So the next thing on my list, I forgot to refresh my memory on the exact nature of this, but the gist of it, if I recall correctly, was if you use the 1Password client locally on your workstation and you, for example, run it to expose a credential like for your NPM registry or something like that. That unlocks your vault in 1Password for some amount of time. And then if that NPM package itself has post install hooks, they get the benefit of also getting access to your 1Password for that amount of time. So that led to a potential supply chain injection attack. So that has been resolved, and the full write-up we'll share in the office hours channel. Anyone know more about this particular vulnerability?
This does remind me of another one. Let me know if this is super similar, where back in the days when you did a GitHub release, and if part of that pipeline used to authenticate with AWS or 1Password, and you didn't make sure what you packaged in your release, so it included your .git folder, for example, suddenly your release now has all your tokens for now.
I don't remember that ever happening, but that sounds awful.
Yeah. And it's just good advice. You're meant to kind of whitelist what you include in the release. You shouldn't just have it all included, but easy to mistake.
And Git ignore files, by the way.
That's another one, yeah.
Another best practice. So I haven't had a chance to kick the tire on either of these. I just thought it was interesting that, it came in pairs, the announcement more or less. It shows just kind of, multiple companies working towards the same thing. I also think Zapier, they got to feel these companies breathing down their neck. Obviously, Zapier has tons of experience managing this kind of architecture infrastructure for, a decade or more. But now these alternatives are coming out, String.com and AgentKit by OpenAI. So what it lets you do is develop an automation end-to-end, and it hosts and operates and runs it, and all you have to do is prompt your way through it. So this is, this is revolutionary, you could say. If you're familiar with things like N8N, I think this is in that category. The difference is it's like no code N8N through agentic prompting like this. Has anyone kicked the tires on this already?
When I was trying to read through reviews to understand what it's useful for and such, a lot of times the comparison to N8N came up, and I was curious, is that something that's been around for a while longer? If you happen to have used that, had any thoughts on that one?
Yeah, but so N8N, yeah, obviously it's been around for a lot longer. It is open source, and I believe they have a hosted version as well. We are not using it at Cloud Posse, but if I were starting from scratch, I probably would have considered that as an alternative to like Make.com and Zapier. But I would say this falls more in the traditional category of pipeline automation like that, where you still have to set up each individual automation, make all the connections, et cetera. Well, what if you could just describe what you want to do and it creates that automatically? Now, who knows? Maybe N8N supports that now. I mean, that inevitably those platforms have to support it. I believe Zapier does something along those lines today already. But if you could say like, hey, so there's use cases for you and I or things like that. Hey, if I get an email from this person, can you add that to this Slack channel or add it into this spreadsheet or add them to the wait list for this product and so forth. You can do things. But I've seen other interesting applications of this where imagine you have a really legacy enterprise reporting system and it's cost prohibitive to modernize that. Maybe at some point, or maybe you're going to build something new, but what they can do is build one of these workflows on top of that legacy ERP system and modernize the APIs in front of it, which behind the scenes are literally doing like ClickOps in the ERP system to accomplish something.
So this could be maybe a better fit for kind of existing projects you want to add on top of rather than building up from scratch, perhaps.
Yeah, well, to me, this is a piece of the puzzle, like they say for customer service. So there's an NAN Facebook group, among others. I'm sure there's hundreds of them, but there's one that I'm in that's all around like marketing and sales automation. And you can do these interesting things where user submits lead form, then go look up the website, then grab look for their job listings, then put that in our CRM. Then they let's say they book a call, and then you take certain actions, and you can work out really complex automations that you could have done for a long time. It's just that it's the barrier to entry to creating these automations or automating your kind of sales process have gotten so much better. So just the same way you can automate a sales process, what are the other processes that could be automated with this? Dude, like this office hours, our pipeline, our processing, the stuff that Nena helps us out with. Is a candidate for this kind of thing. The one thing I will say is, like a couple years or a few years ago, I spent an inordinate amount of time automating our processes and things like that, and that was good and bad. So that automation ran on autopilot for years until it didn't. And then you have so many automations that you end up having this tech debt of automation. And I don't know. That's the ultimate killer for me in automation. It's given me a bit of what's the burnout, you could say, automation burnout, because I did so much automation on the business process on the back end. And then when they stopped failing, they always start failing when you don't have time to go back and fix them. So if these things can just keep working, that would be cool.
Fair.
All right. Anything more on this one or the other honorable mention for string.com? String.com is from Pipe Dream. Oh, here's that time of the show where my Google Docs decides to blank out. There we go. So string.com was the other one. I haven't had a chance to look at it as well, but.
Are these like more like it will create everything for you now? Because N8 is more like you create the steps and it just follows the steps.
Exactly.
And this one will create all the flow for you as well.
Exactly. This is like if you layered ChatGPT or Claude Code on top of N8N, there you go.
Okay, that's cool.
And Pipe Dream, they've been around for a while and they're kind of finding their footing in the post-AI age here. Pipe Dream, if you recall, it's a part open source product. They have hundreds of integrations to different cloud API endpoints. Think of them as an alternative to Terraform providers, but in a read like as data sources. Imagine Terraform providers as data sources were a standalone product or project. That's Pipe Dream. And now they are moving into this space as well, it sounds like. So they've launched a separate brand called string.com, which works similar to then what OpenAI is doing. The difference is, like Zapier, Pipe Dream has all these native imperative integrations with these different providers that they can tap without having to generate that on the fly.
Yeah, that's cool. I'm wondering about the pricing now for both of these. That's gonna be fun.
That's always the next question, right? Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, that's a big number
And
for
I
a
have to
month.
say, like with Zapier, I just got so tired of paying $500 a month to do the automations. Yeah, it saves me time and money, but it also feels like at this point in time, that capability has become commoditized. To pay that much for the automations.
Yeah, like at that point, maybe just asking ChatGPT to create an NAN solution for you and just copy that might be
Yeah.
better.
More and more, that's what I've been doing. Just it's so easy just to ask Claude Code to create the same automation on some other system and
Yeah.
host that somewhere. So, all right, next topic
Okay.
was. Yeah, so we added For Atmos, we added the LLMs.txt, which is a nascent or new standard, similar to like Claude.md or I forget what the Codex.md and Warp.md and all MDs. Like every single tool has to have their own MD file at this point. Well, LLMs.txt is that, but you can think of it more like a programmatically generated file. And it's piggybacking on the idea of robots.txt, of course. Now, LLMs.txt isn't an established standard to the extent that robots.txt is, but this is still pretty nice. And it helps get all the context in one place for your agents. And the way we did it was. All of our doc sites are based on Docusaurus, and there's someone who wrote a plugin for Docusaurus that we're leveraging. So it's really easy to get it installed and set up. It was just this Docusaurus plugin LLMs, and then that generates the file. All right. Next one was, you might remember. On office hours, I don't know, a few weeks ago or a month ago, Josh, I think it was, or I forget, no, it was this Daniel Stenberg of Curl complained about the rash of frivolous CVEs that were being created for the Curl project, where they were basically asking Claude or OpenAI or something like that to, hey, look through the Curl code base and find something that looks vulnerable and just make it sound like the end of the world. And then, it wasted a bunch of developers' time, effort, and energy to go research that only to realize that it was a frivolous CVE. So he's pretty upset about that, and I get it. Well, here's a kind of more positive announcement. Joshua Rogers, that name doesn't ring a bell for me, but who's obviously has some relation to Daniel here, with the Curl project, had submitted a bunch of findings that had been found using AI tools and landed already 22 bug fixes thanks to this. So I think that's pretty interesting how Claude Code can help or similar tooling can help. With the maintenance side of open source, especially some of these projects like Curl, I'm curious how many lines of code Curl is. It's got to be a massive code base at this point due to its longevity. It's been around for like 20 years. Okay. Next. So here's a big announcement for Atmos. So Atmos is Cloud Posse's framework for IAC. It makes managing, among other things, Terraform much easier when you do it at a larger scale. It helps manage your VAR files, your configurations, your automated workflows. It's instead of, a lot of people these days are complaining about tool fatigue, and I get it. And is Atmos another tool? I guess so. But the whole idea that we are trying to solve with Atmos is partially tool fatigue. Why do you need to stitch together 25 little CLI tools just to deploy something or just to operate when you could have one tool that does it all in an opinionated way, but you have to have opinions to get anything done in this world. So one of the coolest things that we've just done is we've added Atmos Auth. If you're familiar with like the overall Auth ecosystem of other tools like AWS TuSAML, AWS Vault, you have Leap, which is now been sunset or loss of support because of the corporate sponsor is no longer there. We've had so many of these tools over the years. I can't remember them right now because for the last 4 years or so we've been using Leap, and then Leap couldn't make it as a product, so that was a setback. We decided that instead of trying to search for an alternative, and since this is core to like everything we do with our reference architecture, with our customers, with Terraform, with what we do in GitHub Actions, with what we do on the console, etc., We should stop trying to rely on other tools to fill this gap and just build it into Atmos. So we've built this into Atmos. If you go to atmos.tools, reference, you scroll down to auth, it goes over the commands that we support. There's also a section on configuration. And if you are familiar with the AWS Vault tool, this will feel a little bit familiar. So what are some of the problems with authentication and identity in the world today? Let me talk about it from the lens of AWS. Bear in mind, this feature is not tied to AWS. We do have specific AWS integrations that it supports, but you can use this with GCP, Azure, et cetera. So here are some of the problems that we've faced in our professional services with clients. One is, well, we need a set of AWS profiles that we use when we authenticate with that client, which are different often from the AWS profiles and configuration, AWS config, that the client might use. The client has many different teams with different permissions able to do different things. And every time a new developer onboards or something like that, they have to communicate how to configure their workstation to work with that cloud, with their IDP, what roles they should assume, what permission sets, et cetera. Then you have another problem. You have Terraform. And what roles should the Terraform be using? Well, for the longest time, what we've been doing at Cloud Posse is the Terraform itself kind of introspects and figures out, aha, for this, I need to use this role. And for this, I need to use that role. But that kind of sucks because that ties the authentication and identity layers to the Terraform root modules themselves. And that makes the root modules less reusable. Instead, it's much better if you can just run Terraform in a permissions context that is deterministic and can do the operations you want. Also, for example, sometimes you could have two overlapping roles, such as in a dev account, where both those roles are allowed to make changes, but user A can assume one role and user B can assume another role, and they still needs to work for both of them. So how can we support that use case? And then, well, you have automation too, right? Like, what if you want to run this in a CI/CD pipeline? The CI/CD pipeline isn't using SAML, isn't using AWS SO, it's using OIDC. And then how do you manage that configuration information? So you have all this configuration information to try and get this stuff working, and there's no tool on the market that we know about that supports this in a mature fashion. And that's what you can do now in Atmos with Atmos Auth. Atmos Auth lets you define all your configuration profiles, all the identities, all the users that you want to be able to support, and then the user can use that on the command line. So other interesting things is even if you don't use Atmos for your infrastructure, you can still benefit from this feature because it works without stack configuration. You can still use it, for example, to get your environment variables for that login for that session and export those similar to what you can get with AWS Vault. You can run a command in a given permissions context with a given identity. So that's really convenient. So that means you could use Atmos to call Terragrunt with a certain identity, or you can use Atmos to call Terramate or any of the other tools out there, or Terraform or OpenTofu directly. Or you can use Atmos to log in, so to go through the single sign-on flow with you, or to log into your SAML provider. You can handle user operations. So, like if you're on AWS and still using legacy IAM users, it ha handles that use case. The who am I? So, what is your current permissions context? It'll help simplify that. And automated configuration wizard that'll help you set up things like your IAM user if you're still using that. It's not one of our best practices to use IAM users, but I know there's still legacy apps and things like that that work that way. So that's Atmos Auth in a nutshell. Any questions on Atmos Auth? Oh, one more thing. We'll be having a demo on Atmos Auth next Wednesday. We just cut this release an hour or so ago, so we'll have a demo of Atmos Auth next week so you can see how it works. Questions on Atmos Auth?
This is really cool, actually. Sounds really promising. My only question is, does that mean we are gonna remove the roofs Atmos configuration for like CI/CD when using, for example, what you mentioned, OIDC? Like, is that oh, okay, that's
That's
cool.
where it's getting to. That's where we're going. So I wouldn't say you can do all of that at once. There's a lot of legwork that we are doing behind the scenes to get to that point.
Okay.
The idea is, from our standpoint, is rather than stitch together a bunch of GitHub actions and bash scripts, move it all into the Atmos core. And the first thing we need to solve is identity and authorization. So how does this get its permissions to do that? So now we've solved that piece. The next things we'll be working on in Atmos is moving in the native kind of GitHub action experience into the Atmos binary itself.
That's cool. Okay.
Yeah.
Perfect. I'm excited to see the demo then.
For sure. We'll have that next week as part of this. So Ben on our team has been working on this, and yeah, it's crazy. We had like the POC up in like 1 or 2 days, and then it took a month to kind of work through all the test automation, unit tests, and validation. But we'll also probably have a tutorial somewhere that'll guide you through setting it up. Right now, it's more like RTFM, but yeah, we'll get some tutorial up. Okay. So this is an announcement that came a week ago. Somehow I missed it. I thought it was kind of interesting. So ECS has found its own footing, and from our perspective, we see more and more companies adopting ECS over EKS. EKS is obviously nice, but I think it's nicer if it's OPP, other people's problems to manage the cluster, and you have the privilege of just operating on a fully managed cluster, and everybody else handles all the operator updates and Kubernetes updates. So ECS, on the other hand, has been pretty nice. You set it and forget it. You deploy it. You never have to worry about another platform upgrade again. It just happens behind the scene magically by AWS, and they've had a good track record of managing that. That said, it comes at a compromise, right? Well, you don't get a lot of the framework-like aspects that you get of Kubernetes. Well, one of the things they did relatively early on in Kubernetes is they added managed EKS nodes. And what that meant was Amazon was responsible at least for managing the node lifetime and life cycle in your cluster. You still see the nodes in your account. They're not opaque, they're not hidden somewhere, they're right there. But they handle any failures that come with that. ECS, on the other hand, has had a few different ways of working. So you could have, I think they're called capacity providers. And you can have a capacity provider for EC2 instances. You can have one for Fargate. You can have one for, I think, like GPUs or something, and the list goes on. Now, the problem is they never actually had something for managed EC2 instances. So you were still responsible for managing the life cycle of that instance. So then the question is, why would I want that if I could just use ECS Fargate? Anybody who's used ECS Fargate can tell you that it ain't cheap, especially when you come from running ECS on EC2 instances. You'll get a price shock when you see how much more you're paying to operate the same workloads. Well, this is a happy medium. This is taking that concept that you had in EKS with the managed nodes and applying that to ECS, Amazon's own bread and butter for running containers. And this gives you greater efficiency for running containers on EC2 instances that are managed by Amazon in your account. And they manage the patching up and update cycle on a 2-week cadence. I don't know if that's configurable, but they will help keep those patched. So from a compliance perspective, that's convenient. Haven't had a chance, obviously, to check this out. Curious if anybody else has been using this or found other or heard from others.
The story of my life actually, because We use ECS, EC2 on dev and ECS with Fargate in production because we never had the guts to do the migration in production to EC2 actually. But yeah, this is like you said, medium ground or middle ground, I guess, which is really cool. The problem with this ECS with EC2 is the compliance. Like you mentioned, we always need to update the AMIs manually, get these vent alerts, figure out. But yeah, seems for me at least this is really interesting to, bring the gap between our development and production environment, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah, I think so. Also, it helps, I guess, with other compliance monitoring tools if you want to install those at the host level. Oh, the other one is, yeah, you're using Datadog agents. You're gonna love this. Now you don't need to have like a one-to-one relationship between Datadog agent and ECS task. Which you use, or a container, which you used to have, which drove the costs up for Datadog tremendously. Versus when you use EC2 instances, you have the Datadog agent per instance, and then you have a lower cost for Datadog. And probably other tooling has the same problem, which is the other problem, right? With Fargate, is you end up having all these sidecars, so you end up having all to use all this more memory, so you end up having larger tasks, and it spirals from there.
Yeah, exactly. Our case.
All right, let's see. Next one was another announcement here. So, automatic quota management, I think it's a misleading name. What I think it lets you do is configure it or manage your service quotas in a centralized manner, kind of like your delegated administrator. Capability. I don't think it's automatically adjusting your quotas, but I could be wrong if somebody has read this better or closer than I have. Because first, when I saw the announcement, automatic quotas, I'm all, wait, what's the purpose of a quota if you have it automatic? If it automatically increases when you need more, then why did you even have a quota to begin with? The whole point of a quota is to set limits. All right. I got one more here. This was interesting, and I think this might be a little discussion worthy. I admit I had to do a little double take, and I give Spacelift credit for taking a contrarian approach to this product here, to this open source CLI. So you'll remember, like last week, it came up again, and then a couple weeks before that, we talked about Amazon's new infrastructure as Bash project, where you can have like a library of these AI-generated Bash scripts that you can use to manage your infrastructure. If you ask me, that's a total regression as far as where we've come. Yeah, that is code, but it's Bash code, and not all code is the same, and it's not declarative, and it's stateless, and yeah, don't get me started. Infrastructure as Bash, bad idea. Well, here's another interesting spin on this. So this is called Spacelift Intent, and I think it's more of a proof of concept, or a little project that they're experimenting with at Spacelift. So Spacelift, if you're not aware, they're one of the prominent backers of OpenTofu. Thank you, Spacelift, for all you do to support OpenTofu. I know that's not a small investment. Well, here's another little Skunk Works project that they're working on. So what this does is, under the hood, it's leveraging the Terraform providers via the RPC exec. So as you, if you're not familiar with the plugin model on Terraform, every plugin is actually a separate binary that is an executable and listens for an RPC request and processes that, and then they serializes that data back and forth between the Terraform core and the provider. Well, a number of companies have come up over the years that leverage this, that they, the fact that you can call Terraform providers without using the Terraform driver control plane. I think Pulumi Infamously did this right in the beginning. I think they still do it to some degree, but the Pulumi wrapped the whole provider ecosystem of Terraform, and that gave Pulumi a heads up because they didn't have to implement the whole cloud provider integration ecosystem. I think since then they've started moving away from that, but that was one example of that. I've seen other companies born where they use the Terraform provider ecosystem as a way, like Pipe Dream, where you can use the provider to ingest data from any provider that's out there. You can ingest that maybe into a database or your Elasticsearch or things like that. All of those were, the using it as a data source is a read-only operation. Well, what Spacelift Intent is doing is, what if we just forget this whole thing about infrastructure as code, meaning you have a code artifact that you are then interpreting and deploying? And instead, you just spoke to the provider directly and you said, hey, do this, do this, do this, do this. So, what Spacelift Intent is doing is calling the provider directly to create an instance. But it doesn't care about the state. It doesn't care if it did it before. It doesn't save that anywhere. And then using the provider, well, let me check first if I have that instance, right? So it can use the data source API of that provider to see if it already has the instance. And this is interesting because it's skipping that whole layer of abstraction, possibly inefficiency, and saying that, well, we can probably just get away with this whole thing just with Claude orchestrating that cloud, leveraging these Terraform providers, and get away with it. It scares the bejesus out of me, from an actual implementation standpoint. And somewhere you want a record, obviously, of what you actually wanted. And I don't know that your PRD or your requirements or your architecture diagrams are sufficiently technically detailed to convey that. And at the point those documents are sufficiently detailed, you're back to code. So I don't know. It's a thought for me. It's a thought experiment. Anyone have thoughts on this one? Do you need code to describe your infrastructure? Is prompting enough?
I mean, it feels to me like it flies in this the face of repeatability and testability and all of that stuff.
Yeah, clearly. Clearly. Is there so I mean, yeah, I'm gobsmacked a little bit. Because I've not considered eliminating that layer before. I mean, what's been beautiful to me about the whole like working with Claude Code and Cursor is A, not having to deal with some stupid no code interface where I have to learn how to click here, oh, we can't support that feature yet, click here to make a feature request. I hated that. And what I love with the Claude Codes working with like infrastructure as code or working with Next.js or any of these things is it basically can make anything possible, makes anything happen. And then it's stable once it's done it. And I can audit the outcome. But how do you audit the outcome of what's been done on AWS or a cloud provider that you've provisioned with all of this? I don't know.
You need an agent for that too.
That's, I guess, where they're going. I guess that's probably where Spacelift is thinking outside the box and where they could go with this.
This almost does feel like a little bit of a April Fool's, to be honest.
That would have been that. Yeah, exactly. April Fool, just what is it, 6 months early or something.
Yeah.
All right, moving on. Here's a small announcement Michael shared with me. I think it's just more of a incremental update. As you know, GitHub automatically warns if it sees certain patterns pushed into version control, and it blocks those from even getting committed if it spots those. And they've increased the number of I guess patterns that it looks for. Obviously, it doesn't hurt. It just seems like an arms race to try and statically come up with every single possible permutation of something somebody might accidentally leak. And last one, Zach, are you on the call today? Let's see, I wasn't checking here. No. So Zach is usually on office hours, and I saw he was featured on the Terraform Weekly newsletter. I didn't get to go too deep on this, so I was hoping he would be here to go over it. He talks about how his process of kind of going from Terraformer to Terraform code, which is like disassembled code, right? Disassembled infrastructure code in HCL, not the kind of code you actually want to manage. And then using a process on top of that to convert that, refactor that into modules you'd actually want to use and maintain. So I thought that was interesting. The other thing he talks about is a tool, C Agent, for managing his agents. This has actually been something I've been looking into, not seriously, but gathering interest in. What is everyone using to manage their agents with today, like on their laptops for development? Are you just using whatever your editor supports or your tooling supports, or do you use a separate tool for it?
I'm using whatever's supported by VS Code Copilot at this point. So
Gotcha.
I think it's they're usually lagging behind, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah. Thing that frustrated me was like I was so excited to start getting to use the like the GitHub MCP. And I can't believe I got to put a token in clear text in a file so that I can use it. And that just seems like an accident waiting to happen.
I use
Exactly.
Cloud.
I think VS Code supports OAuth, so you don't necessarily have to have it. But I use Windsurf nowadays, and yes, that does still require PAT, which sucks.
Have you switched from VS Code or Cursor to Windsurf?
Yeah, I have recently.